Serendipity is an amazing thing. That's one of my favorite anthems. And we couldn't have planned it. I mean, we could have planned it, but we didn't. Thank you. Thank you, and thank you, choir. I'm gonna do something today that I've never done before, and I didn't plan this with the choir, but I'm so grateful that you're here. I usually preach fully from a script, but part of leadership, part of the leadership edges, is learning to do things differently. And so I'm going to try half script, half unscripted, and we'll see how it works. It also means I might keep a little bit more attention to the clock, just so that we're not here for a good 3-hour sermon. I could do if you pushed me, so beware. As some of you know, my mother is a retired director of religious education. So as a child growing up in a congregation in which she served, I got to see what was happening behind the curtain. And I swore, no matter what, that I would not become a religious educator. And most definitely not a director of religious education. There seemed to be no end to the amount of work she did. Teacher recruitment, committee meetings, lesson plan copying, supply closet cleaning, meetings with parents, meetings with the board, meetings with children, meetings with siblings, budget worries, locking and unlocking the doors, making coffee, cleaning up coffee, putting away the coffee supplies, finding last minute substitutes between when we had breakfast on Sunday morning and when we left for church, putting away tables and chairs, creating worship that worked for all ages, buying Kleenex and sleeping on the church floors for youth overnights. It seemed as a child that we either never left the church building or were on our way to the church building. But rarely did I mind. Yet still, I could not figure out for the life of me why my mother enjoyed her job as much as she did. And she still does love the work, now living vicariously through me. I think it is that love of both our faith and the work that has rubbed off on me. You see, I've been a Unitarian Universalist for almost 50 years now. I am a member of that special first generation of Unitarian Universalists, those of us after the Universalist Church of America and the American Unitarian Association combined their congregations and resources to create what we now know is the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations. Footnote 1961. But unlike what happened in the sanctuary, what was taught in the religious education programs in that post-consolidation was a new religion, not a compromise between the Unitarian and the Universalist sides, but a true merged, consolidated faith. So I have been practicing this new faith, this Unitarian Universalism, my entire life. And there is only one thing I can say for certain. It is not easy to practice. It demands of us that we be in constant awareness and dialogue with the world, with ourselves, and with each other. Unitarian Universalism requires a religious engagement, not just when it is convenient or easy, but in every moment of our lives, waking and sleeping. And when I say it requires a religious engagement, I don't mean that we must kneel and bow and pray to a particular deity, or that we even believe together in a deity. What I mean when I say a religious engagement is that we think about something beyond ourselves. The kids will tell you that I often talk about magic and science and religion interchangeably, because from where I have stood and learned, what we call magic and what we call religion and what we call science sometimes is determined by our knowledge and not just a belief. And sometimes it is that felt, lived experience that we cannot explain through science. I'm a big believer in science. I love string theory, that idea that everything is connected one to another. I believe in it so much, and yet there are moments I can't explain. To fast forward in the sermon for just a moment, my co-moderator, Alandria, and I have this type of a connection. There are days when, despite living on opposite sides of the country and despite not being in conversation moment to moment, We both feel the tug that we need to talk. And it's not motivated by something that has come up in our email chain or through an announcement or a Facebook posting. It's just a sense that we both hold. My science friends tell me that could be string theory. My religious friends tell me that could be God tying us together. My spiritual friends tell me that that is just what happens when your hearts combine. Regardless of what we call it, I know it is a true felt sense. And when I talk about religious engagement in Unitarian Universalism, I'm talking about being open to that possibility. That we don't presume to know one thing more than another. That we don't presume to know more than another faith tradition, but that we are open to exploring with one another what our understandings of faith might be. So I offer you that as the framework because it impacts how I lead and what I think of when I think of leadership. I'm a big fan also of modern, I was gonna say metaphors, but what I really mean is modern examples. And I often turn to my favorite genre, which is science fiction. So for those of you that might remember about 20 or so years ago, there was a television show by Joss Whedon called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And so you do. Spun off of that was another show called Angel. And there was a scene where the world had almost fallen apart. The demons were taking over. The heroes were not sure what was going to happen next. They were losing hope. And they were having a hard time figuring out how to engage in the world around them. And one of the characters said to Angel, "We should just give up. There's no point. We should stop trying to be the hero." And Angel paused and he said to the community gathered, "We live in the world as if it could be in order to show it what it can be." That, to do that is to live religiously as a Unitarian Universalist. To be the one to say, the world feels like we're losing. It feels like the voice of our values is not the loudest voice in the world, that every time we turn around, to not give up hope, to stay strong and to continue to live into the world in a way that we believe it can be so that we can show it what it can be, that is to live religiously engaged in a context of Unitarian Universalism. So it's easy, right? I don't have to keep talking. You've got all the messages. You've figured it out. So I've had some incredible experiences. As a Unitarian Universalist, as a youngin, I had access to things that some other children and youth might not have had because they didn't spend all of their childhood in the church. I'm just saying. There was a time, this is less about leadership, but there was a time when I tried to water the Christmas tree in the sanctuary because I thought, you know, nature needs water, and it was stuck inside a building, only to discover it was not a live tree. If you need to know, plastic Christmas trees do not need watering. But through even that moment, I made connections to some adults in my congregation, to our sexton, who taught me the importance of not watering plastic Christmas trees, but also taught me about the inner workings of the building and the importance of room setup as a form of leadership, that where the coffee table goes, how the chairs get set up, whether or not the tables are set before people arrive, sets the tone for the meeting. That moment when even the true leader is not the person standing in front of the room, but the first person who follows them. It's a humbling moment to realize we spend all our time trying to either be or honor the person standing here. And I mean, it's good to do that, don't get me wrong. I don't want Amy coming back and learning that I said, don't trust the people up here. Trust but verify. It's kind of like construction. Measure twice, trust once. But that idea of the second person, right? The first person has the idea, and we tend to say that's the leader. But that second person who recognizes the idea and follows it, they're really the leader. Because how many times have you been in a situation where somebody throws an idea out, and you think it's a good one, but you wait to see if anybody else is going to follow it. Right? So followed the person who threw the idea out, which is great. And as somebody who spends most of my time in this moment looking out into the congregation as opposed to being among you looking at somebody else, I really appreciate that I'm not the leader, that someone out there is. Now be careful, look to your left and look to your right and check a mirror because it might be you. But sometimes that's how you end up in this spot too. Right? You are the one who follows the idea maker from time to time, maybe multiple times, and all of a sudden the next thing you know you've been invited to be the speaker, and from there maybe you've been invited to sit on a board or a committee, and from there you become the board chair, and from there you're doing something else, and who knows what. And it might have just started by simply sitting in an RE classroom with your children because they were fidgety and couldn't sit still. And somehow we thought they had to sit still, though we're changing that too. Church can be a great place for leadership to be developed. It has been for me, I suspect it has been for many of you. I was a fifth grader in the infamous class of students who ran away from the classroom, threw all the supplies around, hid in the boiler room, and the director of religious education decided that maybe our class should be split up. She was right. So she took a couple of us quieter folks, and I was one of the quiet ones back then, and she decided that we would be classroom aides. So she moved me from the fifth grade class to the first grade class to be the teacher's assistant. My job was, in theory, to help with Play-Doh and to help the kids get their snacks. But Louise Rivers, who was an elder of the congregation and a longtime teacher, was the primary teacher in the classroom, and she took one look at me and she said, if you're going to be in my classroom, you're going to be a full teacher. And so she taught me how to teach. And I half blame my mom and I half blame Louise for where I am today. But what Louise taught me in that moment is that to be a leader takes some skill and training. It's not just the natural set that we do. Oftentimes it's easy to look up at a leader and think, I could never do that. They're so poised, calm, collected. And what you don't see, and thankfully for a big pulpit like this, is the knees knocking and the legs shaking and the stomach quivering. But Louise taught me that to be a leader is to take the chance, to say yes to the opportunity. She also taught me, and I've used this as I've gotten older, to be on the lookout for the potential in everyone. Whether it's the troublemaker from the first fifth grade class, or the quiet person sitting in the back corner, or the person up front raising their hand regularly. Being a leader means looking for and seeking out opportunities both to lead and to invite others into leadership, into community, into. I got more and more opportunities. I went from teaching the first grade through to teaching. I kind of moved up with that particular class until I got into high school, and then I became a youth leader in Unitarian Universalism. And through that, I became a trainer because I had built our youth group. I'm not sure how I did it, but magically I had built our youth group from 5 people to 20 people in the course of 2 years, and I was just a high schooler at the time. And so one of the things that the neighboring religious educators did was invited me to lead workshops. And from there, I became a youth advisor. And from there, I found myself in a car driving across the country to Spokane, Washington for General Assembly. It was my first one. It was almost 23 years ago or more. I've lost count. But next year's General Assembly will be in Spokane. It'll be a, for me, reunion of that moment. But I showed up with a youth and ended up with a job at the UUA. So again, opportunities in leadership are always possible. And they come in very, very strange places. A friend of mine put on Facebook just the other day, his name is David Glasgow. He's a Unitarian Universalist music director. He witnessed an accident on the highway and he stopped and got out of his car in the pouring rain and stood and redirected traffic. And this is what he said about that. My dad set an example decades ago now of how important it is to keep a level head when one witnesses an accident. and that most human beings obey a dripping weirdo standing in the middle of the road directing them onto an exit ramp, even when they'd rather continue straight ahead, and even if he isn't wearing a police uniform. Sometimes leadership is just about keeping a calm head. It's about taking time to slow things down. There's the story of the rabbi who's working with a couple, and the couple comes to him and says, Rabbi, how is it that you're so calm? You know, we see you pray in the morning and in the night, but, you know, there are days where things are so hectic. How do you keep your calm in those moments? And the rabbi slowed his breath, and he said, well, on those days, I pray twice as often. I found that, for me, slowing down has made a huge difference. In the recent years, my leadership opportunities have included being the board chair of Star King School for the Ministry during a tumultuous time, and board chairs of the UUA at also a rough moment. And in both cases, the biggest learning that I've had time and again is the importance to slow down for myself and for my board and for our faith, to take the time to do the heart work and not let the agenda drive the conversation. And it's hard because we are a task-driven community. Unitarian Universalism in general, we like to get things done. It stems back from our Puritan ancestors, and even though we have gotten here on the West Coast and theoretically far away from that culture, it still sometimes drives us. And so that idea of slowing down, of praying four times, whatever prayer means to you, it might be meditating, it might be saying words of hope and appeal, it might be just slowing our breath, it might be singing, but doing something that slows us down is so important in leadership. And a metaphor that doesn't work as well in this hall, but to take the balcony view, is another one of those important things. I come from New England, where every church has, where we have the light sconces, there would be a solid balcony you could sit up in. And to stay there and to look out, it's not a concept of above and below, but rather a concept of getting out of the weeds. And again, not to say that you sitting on the floor are weeds, don't get me wrong. But that idea of when you're gardening, it's so easy to see all the little things. And if you move up into the balcony, you can notice the whole garden. Being in leadership is about holding true to the whole garden, knowing the importance of having weeding happening, but not doing it all the time. Rather, finding folks who will help to do it. The other quote that I wanted to offer you comes from another colleague of mine. And I couldn't have said it better. So, you know, Adam Dyer, our UU minister in Cambridge, Mass, said 95% of leadership is knowing how and when to let others be in charge because they are better equipped and more capable. One of my greatest learnings in leadership is to get out of my own way, whether that's to reduce my own anxiety or to delegate to somebody else or to just invite someone else in to help. It's important, this idea of leadership and this idea of getting out of our way. And it's important at this day and age as we begin to look at how we as a faith community are and how we make space for all of the people who want to be a part of our community, even those that have historically been on the margins or not in the room. It asks of us that we transform our leadership models. One of the things that Alandria, my co-moderator, and I said at General Assembly is that for us, we have struggled with the question, what does it mean to have leader-full movements, leader-full organizations, and leader-full congregations? And specifically, what can collaborative leadership look like in these contexts? For a long time, our movement's understanding of leadership has been a top-down one. But as lifelong Unitarian Universalists, we believe that collaborative leadership is the most authentically UU model we can use. When we make space for different leadership models, we make space for different leaders. When we make space for different leadership models, we make space for different leaders. Let us all strive to move through the world making space for different leaders and different leadership models, now and in the days to come. May it be so, and may we be the ones to make it so.